planned, yet highly improvisational. Live theater in which an animator finds a brand new home. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I'm Krista Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program which Stephen DeLuque and I produce here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. We focus on the visual arts, and sometimes that means that we get to be inclusive of the performing and the literary arts. Today is such a day. This program is part two of our visit with members of the new performance group that calls itself Prime Particle Productions. These seven artists represent a diverse array of disciplines, including but not limited to music, dance, sculpture, drawing, costume design, video, poetry, and animation. Their goal is to present live programs which strive to open all of our minds and hearts about creativity, how vast it is, and how easily one can be involved in the process. Today I visit with two members of this group. Continuing from last week is Timo Beckwith, and joining us today is Academy Award nominated animator James Satoru Strauss. A little later, Tim will broaden the description of the purpose of Prime Particle Productions. But we start with James, this internationally respected animator. The three of us met at Timo's house here in San Luis Obispo. Unfortunately, co-host Stephen DeLuque was unable to join us today due to some family obligations. With me in a return visit is Timo Beckwith.
Hi, how are you doing, Krista?
And joining us today, James Satoru Strauss.
You did a very good job pronouncing that. Hi, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We have recapped last week's program, so as we start in now, just getting a sense of one of the players in this who brings a specialty to the discipline, and that, as I understand it, animation, correct?
Correct, yeah. Computer animation and digital effects in general. It's so interesting to, to combine everyone's talents here from the very like physical dance and music and the virtual, bringing in the effects like Hollywood style effects and combining all into one great experience.
Before we get into the skills that you're bringing to this party at the moment, how did you get into animation?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, we only have I lecture all over the world for this, and ever since I was a child, I knew I wanted to be in animation and filmmaking. So everything I did was pretty much geared towards that, studying art and studying computers, and I was drawing and making, planning my own little films from as early as I can remember, probably like 5 or 6 years old. And when I was like 7 or 8, I wrote my first computer program on a, back then personal computers weren't invented yet. So first time I programmed something was on a APL mainframe over a dumb terminal, over a suction cup telephone modem to a scientific mainframe running APL. And I just programmed up my own little games and stuff. And it's just so exciting to me to innovate technology and art, bringing them together. That's pretty much my entire life. And going from there through college and then being at the top of my class and the head of the curve, there was a separation between computer graphics and art, where you had programmers creating animations. The look of them might be really spectacular, but the movement and the emotion wasn't there. Then you have animators who were doing 2D animation at the time, like classic Disney-style movies. And that was like so beautiful and emotive and just gorgeous artwork, but there was no computer aspect involved whatsoever. I've always felt like I wanted to combine these two disciplines. They seemed like they needed to be married together, and I was determined to do it entirely myself. And just perfect timing or the synergy of, you know, everything brought me to a point where I was graduating at Sheridan College at the time, one of the only high-end animation schools in the world. Now there's thousands of them. But when I was graduating, I was one of the few people that actually had computer animation on my reel, along with classical animation Disney style, because on my own, I was training myself in both disciplines. So when ILM came around looking for recruits for this secret, top secret movie that ended up being called Jurassic Park, they were completely blown away to find someone that had already gone so far down this path. Jumping ahead, long, exciting story and adventure. I end up at Industrial Light and Magic as their top animation director for a few years. And, you know, it's just a huge learning experience for everyone, because at that time we were inventing everything every day. I'm going to work. Nothing had existed before. Today, now that we do know how to make water with computers, we know how to make fire with computers, we know how to make like realistic skin and realistic movement on animals and people, and like, and hair was a big deal. Like, how the heck do you get a computer to render realistic hair? But then we figured it out. And now, like, all these great milestones over the years have been achieved, you know, success and improved upon and improved again. And so today, directors sometimes think that all the work, you just press a button and like magically appears, but really there's so much blood, sweat, and tears that goes into computer effects that no one really notices or appreciates. So it is a lot of work still, but some things are a lot easier than it was 20 years ago. Nowadays it's a process of like choosing the right tools for the job and how efficient can you be and like how many shots you can do or just how complex a shot you can create. So it's kind of a melancholy thing for me that we've progressed so far in my craft of computer animation, computer art, digital art, that special effects just aren't special anymore, because every huge blockbuster film is so full of effects that we expect it now. We take it for granted. Back then, one movie like Jurassic Park would have 60 effect shots in it, digital effect shots, and believe me, like, they were special. Each shot we spent weeks and weeks on perfecting, and like every single piece of it we would go over and try and perfect. And nowadays, you know, in 1 week you try and get like 20 shots done per person. The quality of the work is higher and the expectations are higher, but kind of that pioneering spirit and excitement is a little bit faded and nostalgic and in the past. But here, this is all exciting again. This is brand new. Now I'm taking it out of the movies and into real life. And we'll have people participating in it now.
Yeah, I'm realizing as you're saying this that Timo, where did you find this person?
Where did I find Timo?
Oh, okay, whichever way it was, right. We talk a lot about process on this program. And the idea that if the process after a while becomes almost rote, then it ceases to be process in the excitement and the fun that got us there to begin with. Mm-hmm. When you talk about wanting to be an animator all your life, can you remember what it was that just triggered that?
Yes, absolutely. When I was, you know, probably around 5 or 6 years old, it's one of my earliest memories. I'm watching television because I clearly remember the imagery of the show I was watching at the time and the type of spaceships and the vehicles. It actually was an episode of UFO, which is a Gary Anderson, a very trippy but great Gary Anderson show. So it was science fiction shows on television, essentially, that got me like so excited about storytelling in that medium, and just science fiction in general, like just in my core, just resonates so strongly. There's so much opportunity to discuss real current issues without the baggage of current day problems. I write screenplays too, and I my own film direction and kind of producer on my own. Over time, you meet so many people in your field of study that then you suddenly realize, oh, we can make our own studio now, or we can make our own films. That's again, like a really exciting thing that's related to my field of study, is just the ability of people to create films on their own now. And that this is completely new, and this is like radical. I am very excited about that. So much, so many exciting things happening here in Central Coast SLO area. If you just hang out in the city long enough, you will end up bumping into just amazing luminary figures that are like top of their craft. Then you find out like, oh, they know other people that can do this, or, you know, and you know the same people, and then you start connecting together, and then something starts to form, which is just, and that's another just exciting innovation. Have a concentration of great artists and incredible talent that can find each other and then, you know, create something amazing.
And make it work.
Yeah.
You are listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio. We started today's conversation hearing from James Satoru Strauss, a computer animator of worldwide recognition. He is part of the core group of seven artists that make up Prime Particle Productions. We continue now with Timo Beckwith, who was with us last week, and will bring us up to date on what Prime Particle Productions is planning for their first event a little later this month. Timo, will you do a little recap of how you are bringing this group together, the core of the production company that you're working with?
Yeah, Prime Particle Productions really started, I think, with Billy Clayton and Amber Joy and Ted Emmerich when they were knocking ideas around, and Ted lives right next to them, and he was doing sculpture. Billy does video and digital art. Amber does writing and dance and some poetry. And I knew Amber the best, and Amber is who brought James into the equation. They did the project at the Grange Hall with music and video capture of the musicians being projected onto sculptures. And then they started talking to me about ideas that they had of floating sculptures on the bay and projecting onto them and doing performance with dance and poetry and music on the beach. And it just sounded very exciting. And with all the different multidisciplinary skills that I have, and the invitation to become involved, it just started getting really stimulating to dream about all the different ways that we could problem solve, because I really enjoy problem solving and making things. And then when James got involved, of course, I was like very stimulated and to think of, oh, now I can really dream and create images from these dreaming states, which I totally love to do. Just really go into that kind of Zen state where you're allowing things to come to you, and then being surprised and thinking, wow, this, what's even more surprising is we could really do this, and we are doing it. I think our primary motivations, besides having a wonderful time and doing some really unusual things, is to stimulate the creative imagination within the community, to keep that open to anybody of any socioeconomic or age or racial structure or preferences of any kind who happens to be there. So this is really about, in a way, giving to our community, giving that creative spark that we're really feeling is so full of life, and it's just very vital, very alive. And I think sometimes as artists, we get stuck in ruts, we feel isolated. So it's really awesome to come together as these particles and be bouncing off of each other, and then taking that energy and sharing it with the public. We really do bounce off each other. The other night, we were thinking about a layout for the performance that we'll be doing at Sloma. James drew a little circle in the middle of the room, and we're like, wow, that's where we're going to put all the projectors, but we need to build a big sculptural tower, and we're doing it. there's the wood right there. You can't see it on the air, but it's sitting on my table, and we're cutting it today, and it was a bounce, bounce, bounce. I think that's really awesome.
I fully appreciate and enjoy the fact that these are spontaneous events, and as you say, making them accessible, which in this case also means that they are free to the public. To some extent, if you could at least describe one aspect of this upcoming one, is that feasible?
Yeah, sure.
James, which one of you wants to do this? Timo should lead. Okay, Timo?
Okay, some of the elements that we're going to be putting together in this event are sculpture, which will have video projection onto them, and some stills of art. So they may be paintings, they may be digital art, they may be films that we've created, they may be animations that James has created. Some of his animations may be flying around the whole room. We'll have dancers in costumes, and we'll be projecting onto the dancers. We'll be capturing video of whoever's there and projecting it wherever we want to project it. So there will be an array and a kind of swirling of various types of imagery on three-dimensional and flat surfaces, as well as on bodies that are in motion. And then there will be live music happening that will be interacting with all of this. And we'll have some poetry. We'll stop at times. There will be poetry and possibly some spoken word. We don't have a clearly specific theme for this. It will be very improvisational.
And James, in terms of that spontaneity, your creations as an animator will be done ahead of time?
Larger degree ahead of time. But ultimately, so this is part of the continuing innovation of this group, which I think is so exciting. And this first show is going to be a huge variety of things. Everyone who comes to watch is going to be a part of the show. We're all particles participating in this. This is kind of the starting point. So like ultimately, I would like to get to a point where we're putting on maybe like themed shows and still doing like improvisational work. I can't say enough like how blown away I am by the abilities of this group to do improvisational music and improvisational dance. And for me, in my years and years, in my virtual world where I control everything and I'm essentially a god in my world that I create, and I live in that world, and then I turn around and there's this whole real world around me that I'm not really participating in when I'm working on the computer. Then I can come to this group and witness things coming to life, like right in front of me for real. Sculptures I can touch. And it should be normal to experience things in real life, but it's funny, it's kind of ironic for me. Like I've spent so much of my life in virtual worlds that real life is like a new exciting experience to me. So just the music and dance is just so incredible. And that's really was the initial draw to me to come here. And the writing and the poetry got me so inspired that I can bring in my virtual world and combine it with here. So with more projection technology and stuff, we can be creating like wraparound projected universes that we can have interactive elements in them, creatures or points of interest inside the show that can change with the audience and interact with the audience. As far as my participation, that's a very exciting long-term, maybe not so long-term goal that is so inspiring to me.
With a performance of this kind, are you interested in trying to have it preserved in some way on video, or are you really more interested in just saying, this is what this one was, the next one will be what it is?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of cameras running. I know we're going to be videoing what's happening there as well, so that we can have some documentation of what happens, as well as doing video capture of what's happening that is being projected there. So there's all these loops that are interacting. And of course, one of the things we're hoping in the future, and this is really important, is to figure out some funding, because we are doing it on a shoestring. Shelley Kilcoyne has got a good track record in that arena. if anybody wants to come down there and think about it, you know, we're looking for sponsorship. We're looking for foundation grants, and we're looking for community grants. Wherever it comes from, the more that we are able to put into this financially, of course, the more we're going to be able to offer. But the bottom line, I think, is offering something different, offering that new way of looking at the world of creativity, that we can interact, that we can connect, that we can bounce off each other, and we can create new forms of expression. This is the pioneer spirit that I think is infused into what Prime Particle Productions is doing.
That really says it well. James, you have a small computer sitting here. Viewers obviously won't be able to see it, but if there's something here that helps epitomize what you love
not
to
epitomize,
do.
But it's kind of an interesting aspect as well, too. You know, my job is kind of to create worlds that don't exist and let us see them and dream about them.
We're looking at a room at Sloma, which is where this is going to take place.
And then kind of start planning our spaces, how we're going to deal with the structures in the room, how we're going to project, where we're going to put dancers, how the people are going to enter, like what's the experience of everyone when they enter this space? What are they going to see first? What do we want them to be engaged with? As improvisational as it is, maybe there's some way we can guide the experience and over the course of the show have somewhat of a basic game plan and then just go crazy from there. Stuff like this is a part of what I do, taking the real world and putting it into the virtual world.
Right.
So then we can think about it, backwards,
yeah,
right? And then get it the reverse again and then make it real, the real world again. So
the ability on screen to rotate this room around so you can see it from different angles. Having worked on paper enough, know that that's pretty limiting, so
yes.
It's always fun.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We had the plans for the room, and we were talking about it on paper, and then I thought, you know, if only I could see where the walls were and how big the space was compared to the people in it. Like, how many people can we fit in here? Where are they going to be standing? And what if we could see through the walls? Like, here, I made the walls transparent, and where's the light coming from the windows? And what walls do we need to remove? Like, some of them can move, and we can open doors, and so being able to just see through walls and fly around the building and be able to plan what we're doing and then make it real again and like actually make it come to life is another part of, you know, doing a production that, you know, I can kind of lend my talents to.
And it was so cool because I went in and measured all the dimensions and just took photographs of each wall and the ceiling. I basically did a floor plan with dimensions on it where everything was, took photographs, labeled the photographs, sent them to James. The next thing I know, we have a 3D model and we're looking at it, and it really helped us a lot to plan it. But you know, one thing to really keep in mind, I think this is a big element of what we're doing, is that we don't know all the places where we're going to be doing these events. We always want people to think of these as experiential events as opposed to shows where there's a stage and a performer, because we really want to separate some of those boundaries. Yeah. And so some of these may be happening in the forest somewhere. Mm-hmm. They may be happening on a beach. They may be happening in an alley. Mm-hmm. We don't need a stage. We don't need a theater. Yeah. We're taking it out mm-hmm. to where the people are and where the world, the real world is, and expressing. I also wanted to say that dance, of course, has always been a really big element for me in my life, and dance is motion and three-dimensional bodies moving in space and interacting, and it's a great metaphor for life. I always think of life as dance, and we do the everyday dance, how we move through space, how we interact with the world. So that said, I think that's one of the kinds of imagery that I'm most excited about incorporating. I don't know if I mentioned last time we did some shooting at the beach where we were actually drawing in the sand as dance.
That is such a great image.
But yeah, that was really fun to shoot. And I'm sure we're going to be doing some more shooting of that, as well as shooting dancers in front of green screens and other, you know, just silhouettes of dancers, and then being able to project those onto sculptures. And in fact, we're working on actually building sculptures that will have the projectors inside them so they can be carried. imagine carrying a sculpture over your head with a projector inside it projecting imagery on the sculpture. And we just need some short throw projectors, and they're a little high-end right now, so we'll get there.
Well, we go back, of course, to the what used to be just referred to as a happening in the art world in the 60s, these spontaneous art events that took place and only existed for the most part in that amount of time. And then moving on to installation art, which again changes with every location, but each time it gets installed, the shape of the space is different and therefore the piece becomes different. And now you're taking it several leaps farther out there. As you say, the walls don't matter anymore. The spontaneity is still there, but the spontaneity is now totally enhanced with the ability to have technology working in your favor.
Absolutely. I totally intend, I haven't discussed this with the guys, but I intend to like build forests in the computer and like plan out where we're going to have the cameras. And then when we're indoors, I want to create forests that we can fly through and project them on all the walls. We can be tiny and we can be flying, you know, through branches and like around the room and inside the room, be flying around trees and through foliage and just like all kinds of things that we can bring the outdoors indoor. We can indoor outdoors, and like in film, we have like no limits to what we can create. Anything you can imagine, we can do on film now. And here is the start of now in real life, we can do the same thing. It's incredible.
Father of one of my classmates in elementary school was one of the very early Disney animators. Oh, wow. And I'm just sitting here thinking, fantastic, what a world this would be from and is, yeah, from what he was doing.
Well, if you can imagine the like a classic Disney film, Fantasia, years ago, you would go to the theater and watch Fantasia, and then today you can visit Fantasia and be in it. Like that is kind of where we're heading.
I know that this conversation could go on for a long, long time.
Yes.
And I would love to be able to come back and we can revisit after you've done a couple of these and see where things are. But for now, James, thank you so much.
Thank you, Krissa. Thank you so much.
And Timo.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure working with you on this.
Stephen, unfortunately, wasn't able to be here today, but I know that he's very excited about all of this as well. So we will keep all of you posted. Thanks so much. The core members of Prime Particle Productions are Ted Emmerich, Amber Strong, Shelley Kilcoyne, Annika Johnson, Billy Clayton, James Satoru Strauss, and Timo Beckwith. Their first interdisciplinary experimental event will take place at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art on Saturday, August 24th, from 6 to 9 p.m. This immediately follows the opening reception for California Slam, a juried exhibition of sculpture from artists around the state. It will run through September 30th at the museum, located at 1010 Broad Street, and open every day but Tuesday from 11 to 5. You have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. On behalf of co-producer and co-host Stephen DeLuque, this is Chrissy Hewitt, thanking you so much for listening.